Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today's Friday, January the 16th, 2015, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and we appreciate everybody who chooses to join us. We're blessed by your presence, and our opportunity once again is to look into and develop the understanding of this first century Aramaic process of forgiveness. Quite the opposite of what our culture teaches, what we're looking to do is to recognize that we're responsible for what's happening in our lives. And when we're in pain, when we're in turmoil, when we're in trauma, it's because inside of us is the energy of that pain, turmoil, or trauma. You can't let enough people off the hook to get rid of that, to change that. And when you recognize that you can't let enough people off the hook, which is what the world calls forgiveness, to change what's going on inside of you, then you recognize that perhaps there's something else to the process. There's something else to the game. And our offering is that what there is the actual process of forgiveness. That is, the way that you go inside yourself and remove the root of your pain, your turmoil, or your trauma. When people engage in that process, it always amazes me how quickly, how directly they drop right into their own unconscious dynamics, see the part of them that's involved in what's happening in their lives, and have an opportunity to correct it. Jeannie had an interesting experience last night on her way up to the workshop at Unity North in Tampa. And by the way, we've got one more workshop tonight. We're doing Getting the Stretch You Need. But on the way up, she got a phone call from someone explaining that a conference that she was speaking at was going to be limiting their people. She had just gone out and got some flyers printed for this conference, and that they were going to be limiting it to the people that were part of their group. And Jeannie had already talked to several people and invited them to be registering for it. And it was interesting. We were driving in the van, and I was driving, and Jeannie was talking to a person that's been coordinating it in South Florida. And she got this news, and Jeannie instantly and immediately said, well, I canceled my need for, you know, the opportunity to register these folks that I've been talking to. And we got to the workshop, and she computer unhooked up to the internet. And from the time that we were on the interstate where her instant response was to forgive, and if this doesn't make sense to you yet, go to the website and check it out, canceling, the word forgive is shebag, in Aramaic it means to cancel. From the time that she did that, when she got the news as we're driving up the interstate, and about 45 minutes later, there was an email in her inbox. Jeannie, do you want to share what the email had to say?
Yeah, it was awesome, and I there was a part of me that said, "Wow, this is amazing," but then there's the other part that says, "No, it's not. This is how it's supposed to work." But it was just really cool because the email. Let me flip it open here. But yeah, it was my first response when I got the news was like, "Aw, you got to be kidding me!" And but anyway, so then I was just like, you know, and the lady that was telling me, she said, "I know this is hard to swallow," and I said, "Well, I just cancel my need, you know." And so then when I turned my computer on, it says, "We just received this email," and it says, "Hi all, I just want to clarify, they're not going to do commuters. It's the purpose of the retreats for the women to be together and to really bond." And says, "But any women are welcome, including those that Jeannie wants to invite to attend the retreat, but it means staying overnight." And I wrote back and I was like, "Are you serious?" It was awesome. But, you know, because I had totally let it go, and it was like, okay, I cancel my need to, you know, have the people that I've invited attend this two-day workshop. And just, it's like, wow. So that's awesome. Yes.
Thank you, God.
And, of course, when the average person hears this idea of canceling the goal for something that's reasonable and desirable and pleasant and wonderful, the average person says, "But that's crazy to do that. Why would you do that? That would mean you'd never get what you want." Well, actually, if there's a goal that you hold and it seems to, you know, the old thing of you've got a bar of soap in the bathtub and you keep trying to grab it and it keeps slipping out of your hand, that if when we load a goal in the mind, the goal that we load into the mind resonates or sets into activity a part of us that believes we can't have what we want, or believes we don't deserve it, or for some reason or other there's some kind of a withhold, that withhold energy is the thing that goes into action and produces results in our world. When you cancel the goal, what happens is that the goal, being the driver for the perceptual output of your mind, is the thing that recruits the part of your mind that tends to set up the results in your life. And so when you cancel your goal, what happens is you tend to open the part of your mind that holds resistance or holds self-deprecation or holds something about how I can't have this. And once I clean that out, one, my pain disappears. That's the ultimate goal, is for my turmoil to become a person who is free from pain or turmoil. Doesn't mean you're always going to get what you want. But if when you load a goal in your mind, that goal, and you'll notice that you've never been upset with anybody in your life if they're achieving all the goals that you have for them. The only time, think about it, the only time you've ever been upset with somebody is when all of a sudden they're not achieving a goal that you hold for them. And you say, "Well, I'm upset with them." But in fact, the real process that's happening, that's invisible and under the surface or in the unconscious mind, is that when I load a goal, that goal resonates into activity what I hold in me in regard to that goal. And if there's some sort of hostility, fear, pain, turmoil, or trauma involved in what resonates in response to the goal, it's not because that person isn't doing what I want, but it's because there's some form of hostility or fear in me that's being activated or resonated by the goal. And so when I cancel the goal, in the Aramaic language, again, the word forgive is shabag, shabbat, and it means to cancel. So when I cancel a goal, what happens is I collapse what comes from my mind based in hostility or fear and the projection that it's got to do something to do with you because you're not fulfilling my goal. The only reason I'm in disturbance or upset is because I have disturbance or upset in me, and my goal resonates that disturbance or upset when you refuse to achieve it for me. That's how I get to blame you for it. But when I cancel the goal, what happens is I get to go directly to the part of my mind that I've hidden from myself, and I get to clean that part of my mind up. And then I can go back and reset the goal. It's not that there's anything wrong with the goal. It's that when you hold a goal that, when loaded into your mind, produces some form of hostility or fear, then you have a problem because you're stuck in hostility or fear. And hostility or fear are energies that defile perception and disable us in the ability to produce the results that we want. So, again, It may not mean you're always going to get what you want, but you will be far more empowered to get what you want if you take responsibility for and clean out the hostility and fear in your mind around any given circumstance. So that's the kind of bottom line of the forgiveness process. And if that makes any sense to you, or if it makes no sense to you, but you're ready to clean up your life, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and click on the bullseye in the middle of the page. Once you click on that bullseye, that will open a whole series of links, and that will lead you through the whole forgiveness process. Now, don't believe my explanation. There's nothing to believe about this process. If you found yourself bumping up against hostility and fear more often than you'd like to be doing that, then what I invite you to do is just test and try out the process and watch what happens. It's the most amazing thing. It's just the most amazing thing. And so, Dr. Tim, how do you be today, sir?
All right.
Is Tim with
us here?
Oh, there he is. Hey, young man.
Well, I'm doing well.
Cool.
We had another support group last night.
How'd it go?
It was lovely. It was, we decided to watch stress.
Silent getting the stress you need?
No, it is the silent killer.
Oh, stress.
The documentary about
a killer.
Portrait of a Killer.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about the fourth or fifth time I've seen it, and different things strike me each time. It's the takeaway from last night that I hadn't quite gotten the other times was near the end where he says, if this baboon troop, which had been operating in this system of aggression and alpha male on down for who knows how many generations, if that system of baboons can transform within one generation and they're not even consciously creating that, it just this the death of all of the aggressive baboons did it, and the presence of the loving baboons created a new pattern. But if they can do it in less than one generation, what can we do as conscious human beings?
Exactly.
How powerful are these tools potentially? And I say potentially because the tools by themselves mean nothing. You can print out 4,000 worksheets and carry them with you everywhere you go. You can know everything about how to tap and breathe and say the words I release and cancel, but if you never do it, you don't get the benefit. But that's
right.
What struck me.
Right.
If this baboon troop had been in this pattern, and it's the same pattern of every other baboon troop he's ever seen, and the pattern is brutal and aggressive and tension-filled, and they've got arteriosclerosis, and they've got high blood pressure, and they've got, you know, rampant disease and stress. They've got the stress hormones off the charts in their brains, and they only have to work about 3 hours a day to eat. And then, as he says in the video, the problem is then they've got the rest of their 12 hours of waking time available to torment each other. And look, we don't really know how they got into the habit of tormenting each other, but that's what most of the baboon troops, if not all of them he's ever seen, did until this event happened where they ate some tainted meat and then all of the aggressive...
Tuberculosis tainted.
Yeah, yeah. And all of the aggressive alpha males died off.
Yeah, this researcher is actually quite dismayed when he explains that his troop, which he's been studying for years, and although he doesn't like them because they're so aggressive, he's thinking in terms of what a tragedy it is, these baboons get into this meat that somebody's thrown in a dump, it's tainted with tuberculosis, and they start to die, and he figures his troop is all wiped out. But what he observes is the only ones that die are the vicious and aggressive ones. The other baboons carry on just fine. And a whole new dynamic is seen that they've never seen with baboons before. And that is a nurturing, gentle community of baboons that don't have the viciousness and the abuse. Because the abusers are all dead. Now, were they dead because of tuberculosis? Well, if they were dead because of tuberculosis, it would be logical that every baboon that ate the tuberculin-tainted meat would be dead. But that's not what happened. Pretty interesting.
Well, and when you say, you know, did they die because they ate the tuberculosis meat, there's another piece in the lecture where they talk about how for many years in allopathic medical science, when businessmen would get peptic ulcers, the doctors said, well, you need to change your attitude. You need to, you know, be less stressed. And then a number of years ago, they came out with a study that paired a microbe or a bacteria
right
with ulcers, and they said, oh, thank heavens, now we don't have to talk to people about this stress management stuff and learn about their lives. We can just give them a pill. Because everybody who's got an ulcer has a proliferation of this bacteria growing in there.
A pylori.
Pardon me?
A pylori.
Yeah, they've got a lot of it growing, and that must be why they're having this ulcer. Because all this A. pylori is attacking the lining of the stomach. And then that was it. That was the latest thing. And they were prescribing these pills left and right and telling people, we've discovered that ulcers have nothing to do with stress. Until somebody decided to look a little further, and they looked in the stomachs of people who don't have an ulcer, and they found they also have this bacteria. They just don't have as much of it because a healthy immune system keeps it in check. And those who have healthy immune systems are people who are in a more loving, low-stress, nurturing environment, just like the baboons that survived were the ones that spent more time grooming others and being groomed and being cooperative in loving activities with each other. So that reduce their stress level. You know, we've heard studies about how if you pet a cat or you pet your dog, it lowers your blood pressure, it lowers your stress hormones. Well, so those animals that routinely engaged in more loving states of being and activities had better immune systems and they didn't succumb to the tuberculosis. And so That was my takeaway. It is a choice. We do have a choice, and we have powerful tools, and I'm grateful to have access to them.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear on that one. And you know, when we tie this back to the ancient Aramaic, if you look at the Aramaic definition of the word sin is actually an archery term. When you fire at the target, you miss the bullseye. The scorekeeper yells sin, i.e., you're off the mark. And that's all the word means, and you look at the genius of the understanding when they said in the Aramaic, the wages of sin is death. Now, that's been made to sound like some kind of a theological threat. It's got nothing to do with theology. They're just telling you how physiology works. If you put enough disintegrative energy, sin, hate, fear, anger, rage, guilt, whatever, into your tissue structure, you are going to drive your tissue structure into a lower state of vitality. In a lower state of vitality, decay starts to occur. Decay means there's a food supply. If you feed them, they will come. Or if they're already there, they will grow. They will multiply. And so happens with the A. pylori when we buy into the hostility and fear game and begin to deteriorate the tissue. And basically, all those bacteria and viruses are as a cleanup crew. You know, the germ theory as cause has, fortunately, at least they're still calling it the germ theory. Nobody's called it the germ fact yet because it's not a fact. It's a total fallacy. Is there always a germ involved? Yes, of course, because when you begin to deteriorate tissue by sinning, by putting energy in that doesn't belong there, not the Greek idea of sin, but just the fact that there's certain frequencies that support your structure and there's certain frequencies that don't. When you let go of those frequencies that don't, then your tissue structure strengthens and nothing can feed on it because there's nothing there decaying. So to just put that all together and tie it together. And then to look, you know, a good juxtaposition for that video, Tim, might be the next class would be to watch the one of the ghost in your genes and how they're tracing back sin, energies that are off the mark, in this case in particular starvation, that people who are experiencing starvation and they have a community in Greenland where, you know, it's feast or famine, so the community was very clear keeping records and they can see the impact of the famines two, three generations later, and they're starting to see how these energetic patterns are passed on. And so when we talk about, you know, again, go back to the Aramaic, the sins of the fathers will be passed yea into three and four generations. This is genetics. They knew exactly what they were talking about. This is thousands of years ago. And, you know, the geneticists are just discovering it like it's something new. You know, it's the same with, you know, they gave Freud a Nobel Prize for discovering the unconscious. The unconscious has been known in the Aramaic for thousands of years. But the language having been twisted and lost, the real concepts were disappeared, and it became something about religion rather than something about life. And to me, one of the most important pieces of the whole puzzle is to recognize that if you find yourself living unconsciously, if you find yourself saying to yourself, I don't know why I did that, I wish I hadn't done that, I wish I wouldn't do that again, I never want to do that again, there is a tool, a very specific step-by-step tool with which you can directly, anytime you want, you can directly access your own unconscious and remove the unconscious dynamics that drive your behavior. It's just, you know, it's just the most amazing and awesome thing when you realize that this has been known for thousands of years and it's been hidden from us. And what our radio show is about, what our work is about, is to restore that understanding. And of course, we're in Tampa, Florida this week. And if you're in the Tampa, St. Pete area, tonight we'll be doing the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, 7 to 9:30. It's a free open workshop. Tomorrow we'll do the one workshop that when we travel, we charge a fee for. It's an all-day workshop, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. You can check on whyagain.org for the schedule and contact information. And then tomorrow, again, if you're in this area, Sunday, we'll be starting another full week series, and that one will be focused primarily on relationship skills at Unity in St. Petersburg, First Unity. And so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday will be a free workshop each evening. And then Saturday, once again, we'll do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And so if you're in the Tampa, St. Pete area, come and join us and just take a look at this just amazing, amazing understanding of the way the world works that unfolds in a text that's called the New Testament, and a text that by men has been made into something it is not, and see what it really is. You know, people tend, because it's been made to look like religious, to just, in many cases, just reject it out of hand, when the truth is that the rejection based on, you know, most of the reasons people reject it are just so provincial and so uninformed. But if you take the time to inform yourself about what's in these ancient teachings, it'll change your life. It's just amazing.
Agreed. And we had the video last night, and then we had the time for doing worksheets, and nobody else volunteered, although everybody said they had stuff to do. So I did a worksheet on something that had come up the previous day in some energy work I was doing, and had a lot of emotion around the idea of when I was young, feeling that I had to go through this journey, this life spiritual path alone. and it was tearful and a lot of breath work on Wednesday. And so last night I did that worksheet, and as so often happens, when one person in a support group does a worksheet, it resonates very similar issues for the other people in the room. And there was the theme of this sadness of feeling abandoned and having to go through things alone. And then there was the other theme was a recurring intense dream that I both wanted to have and was excited to have, and then once it came, I was terrified by it. And when I explained that part of...
Brought your terror up? Terror up?
Yeah, and when I would... Well, when I was 3 and 4 and 5 and 8 and 9, all the way through grade school, I would be excited for this dream and want to have it. And then when I would have it, it would resonate all that terror and I would want it to go away. And when we would talk, and when I got to that part of the release and mentioned that in the group, one other person said, oh my gosh, I had a dream that was had that same quality, where part of me really wanted to have it because there was a very comforting, nurturing, supportive part to it, and another part of me was upset with it because it would resonate upset because they would say, you know, in the dream, it would come to an end too soon, or she would be pushed back into a state of mind that she didn't want. So it's just another testimony for that support group work that, you know, we haven't said it in a while, but the old African proverb that if you want to go quickly, go alone. But if you really want to go far, go together.
Yay.
And so just another lovely evening with some wonderful people and a fabulous support group.
Well, it's so awesome that you give that gift to your community twice a week. You know, after having done it for 10 years, or almost 10 years, for one night a week, and then turning around, doing what you did, renovating your office to expand it to make the room to do a second support group, is that just, you know, it's such a delight. And when we get to come to Chicago and get to hang out and play with you guys, it's fabulous. The folks that you've worked with and the community that you've cultivated and the work that's been done with people is just monumental. So thank you.
You are welcome and deserving.
Yeah. I like how you add that deserving part in.
Yeah, it's often the source of material for people to do worksheets on.
Yes. Yeah, when they don't think they're deserving. Right?
Yes.
A self-put-down game.
Yeah, it resonates all kinds of energies in people.
Yes, for sure. Well, let's check in with Jeannie and see if there's anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with something for us to be aware of. Jeannie?
Nobody has their hand up. It was really kind of funny. Michelle sent me a text and said she couldn't get online and to tell Peace hi. She knows he's always in the chat room. Well, then right after, I mean, before I could even type that message for him, then I lost my internet. And when I got back on and Peace said, hello, welcome back, he disappeared. And then as soon as he came back on, I disappeared. So I said it had to be, it's a Blog Talk issue. So anybody that's out there that's having problems. And so I told Michelle to quit her creation to change it just because she couldn't get on. She didn't need to kick all of us off. I told her to create something different. But
there you go.
Anyway, it's most of the people in the chat room are guests, and so for anybody who doesn't know, you know, we say hi to you when you're out there as a guest just to be polite. We know you can't answer us, but it's a simple sign-on for Blog Talk, you know, and I've found them to be very upright with everything, you know, but you have to give them some information to be able to actually chat in the chat room, and that's a simple process, and it's on the Blog Talk site. We do have a hand up now. While I was talking.
Well, let's say hello.
All right. Area code 901, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi there, this is Brenda, and I apologize. I was not available for the first half of today's discussion, but I had my hand up yesterday, but it was at the end and we didn't have any time. And I wanted to comment, Michael, on your issue about the question of whether using a different word for forgiveness.
Right, yes.
And I wanted to just toss this out. I have had the same problem in working with my libertarian group. You know, a lot of people say, well, why don't you just call it different with the libertarian philosophy, which is a philosophy in addition to being a political party. And my love is really the philosophy of libertarianism and the spirituality of libertarianism. And I said, well, no, if we change the words, then that this changes the meaning. And Andrew J. Galambos wrote a book called Sit It Tour Astra. It's a large, large book. And I was introduced to his work a few years ago. And he asked a physicist who decided not to work for the government anymore because he didn't like what they were doing with his inventions and things. And he asked the question, why in the history of mankind have the physical sciences and biological sciences advanced so far that we can have the technology and the ability to blow ourselves up, but the social sciences have not advanced far enough to keep ourselves from doing that? And his answer to that was semantics. And he says, in the biological and physical sciences, you have precise language. Everybody knows what the terminology is of a specific word. In the social and political sciences, we do not have that. You can ask 10 different people what liberty or freedom or forgiveness or any of those words mean, and you will get 10 different answers. And so I agree with you. I think that it is making sure that we get back to, I know we call the left liberal. Well, the terminology liberal means to be free, and it really doesn't describe what the right is calling the left. And I'm continually asking my friends to start using the proper terminology of statist and non-statist. And it's difficult to change that, but I think we're right on track, as we have to reclaim our words back and the meanings that they mean. And Galambos said that regardless of what the word is that you're using when you're talking in conversations, that you must define what the word means to you for that particular conversation, and that everybody's on the same page. So anyway, that was just my comment from yesterday.
Yeah, that's good affirmation. And, you know, I think another reason why things haven't advanced in the social sciences is because there is a mindset on the planet that says one group of people needs to control another. And so as soon as words come along that describe the tools with which one can be freed from others' control, that is in the social sciences. So in the realm of the mind, in the realm of emotion, in the realm of relationship, there are known tools for how to have liberty, how to be in that state of true liberty. But then what happens is those who would control others will degrade the conversation and, sadly, in many cases, make it into a religion. And, you know, if you look at the game of those who would control, in traditional terms, those who would control others are called kings. And if you look at kings, they have, you know, last night our class was Laws of Living, and we talk about the definition of the word law in that class. And the fact that, and by the way, congratulations to Susan for her first Laws of Living class last night, her first session in her new class. But when you look at the idea of law, what has happened is that in the true world of the social sciences, law is a word that describes the way things happen. When people understand the law, they know how things happen, and they can either cooperate or not cooperate with the law. So, for instance, the law of gravity happens. Nobody's got a choice about it. You can resent it, you can resist it, you can hate it, but there's a law of gravity, and it doesn't care what you think, it just happens. Nobody's ever violated the law of gravity. You know, people who fly airplanes harmonize with, understand, and fly airplanes because they harmonize with gravity. They understand how it works, and they work within its structure. And there are laws in the social universe in precisely the same way. But what's happened is, in that universe, the definition of the word has been changed from the way things happen to the rule of a superior. And the superior, of course, is the person who's got the biggest gun. So the king has the guns and therefore writes the laws. And today, in most circles, when we talk about laws of living, what most people will say is, well, just give me a copy of them. Tell me what the superior wants from me, and then I'll do it. Then I'll understand law. And the law has nothing to do with the rule of a superior. But what happens is, when an understanding of that law, that is the way things work, happens in the social universe, where we could correct this game of the superior ruling, is that, that is, the superior being the ruler, is that madmen make up a big king. And the big king has got a really big gun, and everybody better obey. And the big king with the big gun is hell. And it keeps people in terror, or it helps people to stay locked into their terror. And in the social universe, law operates in the mind and relationships in every arena, and it's not about the rule of the superior. It's just about the way it works. You know, the video that Tim was just talking about, and there is a link to it. You can watch it free from our website. The video is called Stressed Portrait of a Killer. What it shows is that there's a way to keep physiology healthy and well, and there's a way to destroy physiology. And in the particular example, this researcher who's been working with going to Africa for years and studying baboons, taking blood samples and measuring stress hormones and such. And what they show is, and you know, you take it back to the Aramaic, and they said to this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago, what's most important in the law? And he says, you got to keep a condition called rachma, which is a gateway for love to enter your mind open. And if you do that, you've engaged in the most important thing in the law. Let's take a look at this video on stress, Portrait of a Killer. And these baboons eat this tuberculosis-tainted meat, but the ones who live the law aren't affected by it. The ones who live in hostility and fear and do not have this nurturing, caring quality within them are destroyed by the tuberculosis-tainted meat, or so it would appear. But it really has nothing to do with the tuberculosis-tainted meat. Yes, there's an organism there, and because of the deterioration of my theory or thesis would be that because of the deterioration of the tissue in the baboons that live in a vicious world that do not nurture their own cellular structure or that of others, there is a decay process happening, and when an organism comes along that can feed on that, it takes advantage of that, and downhill one goes. So it's all about law, and it's just the way things happen. Got nothing to do with the rule of a superior, and there is no superior out there with a big gun called hell that's going to get us. We do it to ourselves because we refuse to understand law. Vladimir Lenin says the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. And, you know, forgiveness, it's something that's got to be restored to the planet. And I think Galambos is right on with his understanding of the, you must have precise definitions for the words. And we need to reclaim the truth of what it's all about. So thank you for that input. That's awesome. Any other thoughts, Brenda? Oh, your mute's on, sweetie.
I said she's disappeared off the switchboard, so I'm not sure what happened there. But we do have another caller now.
Oh, well, let's say hello.
Okay. Area code 541. You're on the air. Is this Julie?
Yes. Hi. I have my
headphones. Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me all right with my headphones on?
Loud and clear. You're good.
Okay. Well, that was Brenda who called in just now.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear somebody mention Andrew J. Galambos' name. And I'm wondering if anyone else has heard of him, because it seems like it's time to establish his work here. It would be such a solution for what's going on in the world right now. I just want to say I became familiar with his work when I was 18, and that was 40 years ago, approximately. And so I would love to join up with anybody who is aware of his work. And thank you for letting me mention that, Michael. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe Brenda and I could exchange phone numbers. I'd love to talk to her further if she's willing. That'd be great.
Certainly. I'm sure that would be so, and we will pass your number on to her.
And Brenda just came back on, too. Hi there.
Well, say hello to each
other.
Sign
off. Well, hi, Brenda.
Brenda, this is Julie. Julie, this is Brenda.
Hi there. And, yes, you can give her my phone number.
Great.
I probably won't come right over the line. But thank you. Oh, I'm so excited, too, because there are so few of us who are familiar with her and with him. And when you go online, there's some, and I was surprised even within the libertarian groups, that there is some, you know, kind of caustic reaction to him. And I think he's just brilliant. He's taken Ayn Rand stuff and gone way beyond that. But Jay Snelling, who was the only certified teacher for him, I met at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas 2 years ago. Unfortunately, he has just passed away. But I do have permission because the Galambos' work was put in the hands of his attorney, who was supposed to put it out. But as Jay Snelling has told me, that they feel that the public is not smart enough to understand it, and so they're not doing it. I've been trying to find out how to do some reproductions of just his definitions and his capitalism is not conservatism. Jay told me just to go ahead and do that and put that out, and then I have access to his work, so we can talk about that on the phone. But that's why you don't hear too much about it. Okay.
Thank you. Yes. All right, we'll talk. I appreciate this. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Fabulous. Definitely time
for
wake up
so
all the way around.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Julie.
And we have another hand up.
You had disappeared there a minute ago, Brenda, and so did you have another thought for us?
I disappeared again.
Nope. You're with us. We got you loud and clear.
I am playing with you? Okay, I can't tell if I'm on or off.
You're on.
Okay, I wanted to tell everybody, I've been doing the wellness relaxation CD.
Wellness to stillness CD? Uh-huh.
Right, and it is phenomenal. So anybody who is not working with it, I would say I go to sleep with it at night. And then if I wake up in the middle of the night, I do it again. And it's pretty interesting to experience some of the subtle changes that are going on since I've started listening to that. So I would just offer to whoever's listening that if you don't have that CD, then to get it and use it.
Cool. And basically the CD, it's in our catalog on the website. The CD is entitled Wellness to Stillness. And actually it's a meditation that I created way back when I was doing more along the lines of physical medicine. And so it created a meditation that goes into a progressive relaxation and then balancing the glandular, limitative nerve, digestive, muscular, and circulatory systems of the body. And actually, it was a meditation that kind of dropped away. I had moved from Atlanta to Fort Lauderdale, and somewhere in the fray it got lost. And actually about 20 years went by, and I got a call from a guy from Canada that when I first came out with that, it was a cassette tape at the time I'd given to this fellow that I met just in Florida. And I get a call from this guy in a panic. And he's like, my name is such and such, and I'm from Canada. I met you in Florida 20 years ago. Do you remember? It's like, well, actually, I've slept a few times and connected with tens of thousands of people since. So, no, I don't remember. But, and he's like, well, that wellness to stillness CD that you gave me, that's my health care plan. We have free health care up here, but I never use it. What I do if I'm feeling sick is I lay down, I do that meditation, and I get up and I forget I was ever sick, and I wore the tape out and I need another one. It's like, oh, geez. And it had disappeared, so I went back and started looking through my archives and found it, remastered it, and so it's now a 20-minute CD that you can order from the catalog. It's $10 and $5 for shipping, so if you want a copy, you can just jump on the website and order it. But it is powerful, and
yeah.
You know, an interesting piece of feedback that I get from it is that from the insomniacs who say, they never hear the end of me. And I was actually on the road about maybe a year and a half ago, and in my briefcase, I happened to find a copy of it. And I have not listened to it since I created it. It's now over 30 years ago. And so I had it just, you know, oh, how'd that get in my briefcase? Well, I'm going to listen to it and see. I never heard the end of it. Put me to sleep, and I still haven't heard the end of it. So it works very effectively for people with, at least I've had dozens and dozens of people with insomnia that say, I just, you know, go to sleep. So
I do have a question on it, to
yes.
just clarification, because you say that you're talking about your index finger and your middle finger.
That's
against the thumb, and you do 3, 2, 1, and I didn't quite,
right.
And maybe fall asleep too soon, but if you could just kind of explain that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Well, there are energetic pathways in the body. It's kind of akin to the tapping that Dr. Tim works with a lot. And if you imagine putting your first two fingers, you know, against each other, and then touching your thumb to those two fingers in each hand. So you're kind of making a little circle. And as you touch, that closes a pathway that tends to relax the nervous system. And so what I suggest in that CD is that people do that, take both hands, you know, take the index finger and the second finger and kind of just lay them against each other so they're kind of like one digit. And then touch the thumb to both of them, making a small circle, and just do a countdown of 3. Breathe, 2, 1, and it tends to just physiologically relax. Just tell the mind, okay, it's time to relax. And then we go into the each of the structure systems of the structure, the energetic, again, glandular, limbative, nerve, digestive, muscular, and just do a balancing and normalizing of that structure through imagery.
And you said that with both hands or just with one hand?
Yeah, do it with both. You can do it with one or both. I do it all the time. You know, when I go to sleep at night, that's
uh-huh.
my sleep signal.
Oh, okay.
Been doing that for decades.
Doing that, I just didn't understand what the purpose was of it, exactly what
uh-huh.
the thing was.
Yeah.
The other thing you talked about is to say that if you don't want to go to sleep, then like if you're doing it in the daytime and you just want a meditation, and then you count to 5, count down from 5 or count up to 5, and that what re-energizes you.
Right.
I haven't tried it in the daytime yet.
Aha. Well, give it a shot. Let us know how it functions for you. I have to go back and listen to it and stay awake through the whole thing because, as I say, it's something that I created over 30 years ago. And I did listen to it that once when I was traveling and didn't hear the end of me. So I have to go back and refresh myself on everything that I built into that CD. I remember it was a significant project to put the ideas together and, you know, to tap it together. So.
Well, I know,
and I thank the gentleman from Canada who called me and insisted that I find him a copy.
Well, I thank him also, because the thing that when I first listened to it, and I think I did get through the whole thing the first time I was awake, and it was talking about how it increases the brain power and then heals different things in the body, tones the skin and everything like that. And I went, oh, pretty cool. I can, as he said, this was his healing process. And so I believe that I have noticed some definite impact on my thinking process. So we'll see. But anyway, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you for talking about it. And if anybody wants to order that CD, it's $10. You can just go to whyagain.org and go to the catalog. And the catalog, or actually I think it's now called Order Products. Click on the link that says Order Products and look down the list, and you'll find Wellness is Bonus.
All right,
and
well,
so beyond that.
That's, I think that's all my comments.
All right, young lady. Appreciate you. Blessings. Lots
Thank
of love.
You. Bye-bye.
Okay, 646-200-4169 is our call-in number. You have a thought, question for us? We'd appreciate and love to hear your voice. And we've got, I think, about 8 minutes left. Hour moves by pretty quickly. Dr. Tim, do you have any other thoughts for us? Anything to share?
I'm just enjoying the conversation. And remember,
have you ever, you know, it's never occurred to me to suggest in particular doing the meditation, that CD, with a support group. Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't. I've listened to it a number of times on my own, but I haven't ever moved. We have mentioned it a number of times, but I haven't had the inspiration to run it in the support group. Because most of the time people need to drive home after the group.
Right.
Maybe if we do a sleepover.
Well, you could start out early and then brighten them back up with a worksheet or two. So, but anyway, it might be interesting to just see what the impact is in a whole group moving the energy in that direction. I've never, you know, particularly thought of that in a support group context.
Well, I'll give it some consideration and offer it to the group.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Jeannie, do we have anybody else with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Hello.
Your connection's down? Are you on the phone, Jeannie? Mute challenge?
Then yes, we have another caller.
Okay. So Jeannie says we've got another caller. Is your phone down too?
No.
Okay, well, you're muted then.
I can't turn off that phone.
Oh, okay. So Jeannie's having, I guess Blog Talk's having some technical difficulties today, so she can't turn her. Okay, 413, you're on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling
Michael.
From?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jeannie. It's Linda here from Massachusetts.
Well, hey there, young lady. How are you today?
Good, thank you. And hi, Dr. Tim.
Awesome.
I have a question. Is it just as possible to be addicted to fear and grief as it is to be addicted to rage? I know you talk about being addicted to rage.
Absolutely.
Okay,
because I think that...
Oh, pardon me, go ahead.
Well, I think that what can happen is if there's a deeper level of pain that we don't want to feel... that we don't want to deal with. And, you know, here's our definition of addiction. Any substance, circumstance, person, or activity that I compulsively go to in order not to feel my pain or in order to stay separated from my guidance can become an addiction. So
okay.
If I'm using, you know, if all of a sudden I have to deal, let's say I have to deal with my issue around, you know, such and such, whatever the such and such is, and I instead go to fear and use that fear to avoid, then I'm using that fear in the same way as rage, to addict myself, to be addicted to and not have to deal with that situation. It's avoidance mechanism. And all drugs are basically avoidance mechanisms. You know, how did that phrase go? Somebody said that drugs are for people who can't deal with reality.
Okay, that's so, all right, that's interesting. Because I'm attempting to find a balance between, doing the worksheets and feeling what I'm feeling when it comes up. And then during the rest of the day, I just noticed this, and I think we've talked about this before, this sort of attraction to finding something to be sad about or grieved or fearful of. And it just seemed the mind sort of searching, and I keep pulling it back and put my mind somewhere else. And so I'm just trying to get clear in my mind, and I guess maybe it's just as I go through my process, it'll become more clear to me when I'm not sure how it all relates, when I'm just using it as, you know, grief, as just a place that I'm used to being and living in, you know, a lot for a good part of my life. Not as much as it, you know, from what happened this summer, obviously it came way up and it's been up and I've been working with it and healing it. And I just noticed that at times there's, it feels like there's something kind of dragging me down, but maybe it's just, you know, just have to be patient and work through the process.
Well, I think that, you know, the habit being in a certain state of mind and developing thought patterns about self, about that's where I deserve to live, can be a good subject for worksheets. Like, you know, the natural state of a human being holding a newborn child is this awesome presence of love. But if I hold thoughts that say, well, I don't deserve love, I'm not worthy of love, I'm not loving enough, then I can use those thoughts to create something other than my natural state. I can use those thoughts to overlay my natural state and lose contact with who I really am. And that can be an addiction, for sure.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And because I've noticed, like, in the last week or two, I've had days where I feel really good, you know, and just, I'm like, wow, this is like sort of a different kind of a feeling of feeling good. And then the next day it'll be like, you know, kind of
lower
really
than snake
not
belly.
Good at all. And I'm thinking, well, what did I do yesterday that's different than what I did today? And becoming more aware of where my mind is going, much more aware of, or I have intention of being much more conscious of what's going on in my mind than I have been.
Oh. Right. Well, my take would be when you have those days where you get really connected and really in a high place, remember the symptoms of healing. What's going to happen when I get to a new level of vitality? You know, it's kind of like I can't dig into a deeper part of healing my mind than I have the vitality to handle. So if I have pain and trauma, let's say that's at a level 6, but I'm only at a level 5 vitality, I'm not going to be able to feel or deal with that. So I know you've, especially since the intensive, really been digging in and doing your work. And as you're doing that, you're getting those new vitality boosts. And that's going to bring the next layer up for healing. So you're right on track. Stay in willingness. Keep doing the right things. Keep your nutrition on track and keep doing worksheets. And you're peeling out those layers. And those layers are a process to go through. I know Jeannie had a new vitality just maybe 10 days or so ago, and she shared with me that she just, all of a sudden, she spontaneously went into this whole memory of sadness and loss around her son and her parents, and it was just this, you know, more or less a thoughtless state, but just this deep sense of sadness, and phew. Like, you know, in minutes it was gone, and she had been at a new level of vitality, and that's what moves the energy. And so, and this would be a great conversation to continue if there are more thoughts about it. And unfortunately, our time is just about out, so we're down to the last few seconds of the show. If it feels appropriate to call in tomorrow and let's continue the conversation, that would be awesome. And in the meantime, we invite you to bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give. Blessings. Bye-bye.